Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have six cases being submitted today, two of which will have oral argument. Both are scheduled at 9 o'clock. On my left is Justice Dixon Holman, and on my right is Justice Lee Gabriel, and we are the panel that will be hearing your case today. All right, would you call the first court case, please?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Paul Goetz, and I represent the appellants in this case, Ronald B. Foreman, Rosebud Development Limited, and Arbors Development LLC. This case involves a claim asserted by the plaintiff in the underlying suit, Classic Century Homes, Inc., for recovery of unpaid water tap fees that were collected by the developer, the Rosebud Development Limited, in connection with two residential contracts for the sale and purchase of property. In the brief and in the underlying case, these contracts were referred to as the Phase 1 contract and the Phase 2 contract. The Phase 1 contract contemplated the purchase by buyer of 64 residential lots. That contract was entered into in August of 2002. The last lot takedown under that contract was in October of 2005. The second contract, which is the Phase 2 contract, was entered into in August of 2005, and there were 20 lots purchased under the Phase 2 contract out of 43 lots specified in the contract that were required to be purchased by the buyer. The claim relates to 25 lots that did not have the water tap fees paid to the water source in this area, which was Mountain Peak Water Company.
What is the relationship between the 23, well, between the lots that were not purchased under Phase 1 and Phase 2 and those 25 fees you just mentioned?
Your Honor, there were 15 lots out of the Phase 1 contract that did not have the prepaid water tap fees. There were 10 out of the 20 lots.
Wait, what happened to the others? Because you were going to buy 64, and as I recall, 43 were bought?
Your Honor, under Phase 1, 64 lots were purchased.
Right.
And there's no dispute about the buyer not purchasing any lots under the Phase 1 contract.
Okay, so the 43...
The 43 relates to the Phase 2 contract.
Okay.
And in that regard, the buyer, Classic Century Homes Limited, only bought 20.
Yes.
And there was a strict takedown schedule under the Phase 2 contract. And, of course, the Rosebud Development's counterclaim was for breach of contract.
Right, for those 23 lots, right?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. There are three points that are raised in the brief, the first of which is that it is our contention that all of the claims brought by the plaintiff in this case are barred by the doctrine of latches because the plaintiff unreasonably delayed in asserting those claims by failing to file suit or file any type of lawsuit to recover the unpaid water tap fees within the one-year period following the final contract closing as required under both of the purchase contracts.
But they said they didn't discover that the fees were unpaid until a point in time and then filed their lawsuit within 1 year after that discovery. What's your response to that?
We still believe that latches applies, Your Honor, because, again, 15 of the lots in question were under Phase 1, the last of which under Phase 1 closed in 2005.
But if you don't know that something has occurred, how can you be poured out because of latches because you didn't know?
Well, they apparently didn't know about the 15 Phase 1 lots until sometime in, I believe, August of 2008. The suit was filed in October of 2008, but the suit only sought to recover damages under the Phase 2 contract. And it was not until October of 2011 that the plaintiffs amended their pleadings and added claims under the Phase 1 contract.
But you knew exactly which lots that they were talking about from the get-go because they were enumerated in plaintiff's original petition.
Your Honor, we really didn't because in the original petition, they were described by addresses.
Okay.
And the contracts contemplated lots and blocks. So, and again, the only assertion that they ever made was that, hey, these lots under Phase 2 didn't pay the prepaid water tap fees. And that was the focus of the defense.
So
we did discovery. We took depositions.
You're trying to tell me that the delay is in amending their suit to correct Phase 2 to Phase 1 or Phase 1 to Phase 2?
No, Your Honor, we understand that with regard to Phase 2, it's uncontroverted that out of the 20 lots that were purchased, 10 did not have the prepaid water fees that had paid to Mountain Peak. Out of Phase 1, which was not brought into play until October of 2011, some 6 years after the last closing under Phase 1, did we realize that they're now making claims for unpaid water tap fees under the Phase 1 contract. That was
a
brand new.
They didn't know about it until 2008. So how... Your only delay that I see is that they told you it was one phase in their original petition, and then they decided it's in both phases when they amended in their second original, right?
That's pretty much correct.
Okay, well, let's go on to the next question then. I don't understand what your detriment was.
Well, the detriment was this, Your Honor. For some 3 years, the defense of the lawsuit had to do with their claims that we were dealing only with the Phase 2 lots, and we were trying to figure out which lots in Phase 2.
Well, you knew. They listed the addresses for you. You couldn't take the addresses and figure out which lots they were?
Well, we couldn't because they never said that these lots were in Phase 1. We had no idea.
You mean you couldn't? You're telling me that you couldn't tell the address of the address that we're talking about and figure out which block and lot number it was?
Well, we could have,
okay.
But again, Your Honor, since they were only suing under Phase 2, we simply assumed that they were just flat out wrong in their contention that all these lots that they listed in their original petition. You know, we're part of Phase 2 and that they didn't have the unpaid water tap fees. In other words, based upon their discovery responses, the deposition of the president of the company, it was our understanding, you know, through all of that defense and through all of that discovery, that they were still maintaining that all of these lots were under phase two.
And,
we simply determined, no, not all of them were, only 10 were. And I believe that there's really, you know, no dispute about the fact that the Rosebud, yes, it didn't pay for 10 lots under the phase two contract.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another question then. You said that the prepaid situation really, from your understanding, was we had a course of dealing where we would pay it then when construction started. If that's true, why was this in the contract contrary to that course of dealing?
Well, first of all, it was not in the phase one contract.
Okay.
There was no provision in the phase one contract that said that the buyer was going to deposit with the seller a certain amount of money to cover prepaid water tap fees.
Okay.
And that covers 15 lots.
Okay.
With regard to the phase two lots, 10 were not paid for. Yes, there was a clause in the contract that stated that the purchaser would deposit, I think, $1,915 per lot for a prepaid mountain water peak.
Prepaid water taps.
Yes. And there was testimony at trial from Mr. Foreman where he said that in his view, and this was the course of dealing, they could not prepay the developer, the Rosebud.
I understand the city wouldn't take that many, and they didn't have that many. But why is it in the contract to do it one way when you come back and say, "Oh, that's not really the way it was"? Why put it in there?
Well, it was just course of dealing, and I would assume that the seller just wanted to make the buyer aware that there was going to be an additional charge for each lot. To cover the water tap fees, and the testimony was that because Mountain Peak would only sell them blocks of lots or blocks of water tap fees, 10, 20, maybe 40 lots at a time, without there being a designation of what specific lots these water taps paid for, my client simply assumed that's what prepaid meant. They had to go out and buy these water tap fees to the extent that they were available from Mountain Peak. And then, with regard to the course of dealing out there, Classic Century Homes was not the only builder in the Rosebud development. They would have to, the builder would say, look, you know, we're ready to build a home here. We need a water tap. And my client, the Rosebud, would then go get the water tap fee for that particular lot that the builder wanted to build on. That was the course of dealing. And there was no representation, certainly no fraudulent misrepresentation that was ever made by the representative of the Rosebud development that would have induced the buyer into, you know, buying all these lots in this subdivision simply because there was a statement in there that the buyer would have to pay a certain amount of money per lot for water tap fees.
Well, we're going to get to that when he gets up here. But your Mr. Foreman said he never told Mr. Morrow about this. So what evidence did you have of the course of dealing other than, we did.
Well, it was Mr. Foreman's testimony, and there was also evidence adduced at trial, Your Honor, that these folks, these two people, Mr. Morrow as the builder and Mr. Foreman as the developer, had done many, many deals before and had established a course of dealing. And this is it, the this was the one subdivision that where the city did not provide the water, and there may not have been an actual statement made to Mr. Morrow. Mr. Foreman sometimes acted on his own in signing the closing statements. Sometimes either or both of his sons, Brett and I forget the other person's name, they also signed some closing statements. But the point there with regard to the exemplary damages is that there's no clear and convincing evidence as required by Section 41 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code that there was a knowing material misrepresentation
right,
that was made.
I'm going to get to that with him in a minute.
And my time's up, so thank you, Your Honor.
Since we're down the road here, let's just start with some questions. I don't understand what is, I understand in phase two, you prepaid the water tap fee, and then you say they didn't pay it and it wasn't prepaid, and you had to pay it again, is what I gathered that happened. But I thought when you started construction, they were going to pay it. So I'm not understanding your damage on phase one and phase two.
Okay. They took $1,915 right. at the beginning.
When you bought the lot.
They took the money.
Say, I've paid the water tap fee.
That should have paid the water tap fees.
Right.
They weren't paid.
Right.
In order to build on those lots, you have to do it again. Those
You're
are
telling
the
me that when you started to build one of these houses on this lot for which you'd already prepaid the water tap fee to them and they hadn't paid it, they didn't reimburse you or whatever
they
at
didn't
closing?
Pay it. No. I'm sorry, you said at closing?
I'm sorry, at the beginning of construction, they didn't prepay you? Or are you just telling me, well, we bought the lots and we set them into our inventory and we never built a house, so if we ever do get to build a house there, we've prepaid this money and they haven't paid it? Is that?
Essentially, that's correct. Some of the lots have been built on. Some of the lots are sitting in inventory. So
but if you started, if you built a house on a lot for which you had prepaid the water tap fee, they reimbursed you. So we're talking about lots that have been set over here into inventory and nothing has been built on them because construction didn't begin, at which time they said we would reimburse you, right?
No, Your Honor.
Right?
Let me explain it and then see if I can figure out where we're wrong. Okay. When we closed to actually purchase the lots
right.
and take them into inventory, we prepaid those water
right.
tap fees. Then when we go to construct those lots, we're supposed to be able to pick up what we need, no further payments, no further contact with them, no reimbursement from them. It's supposed to have already been paid. So we go down, we get our right to go get the water meter set, we pay nothing else.
Right.
We go down
right.
the road, we're doing this. For
so
these,
what happened contrary
these
to that?
25 lots, finally, what puts us on notice, we go down, we think everything's the way it's been represented to us. We go down and Mountain Peak says, oh, this hadn't been paid. And we go, no, wait a minute. We paid this at closing 5 years ago or 6 years ago.
So did you
Mountain
pay
Peak,
it again?
Pardon?
Did you pay it again?
Had to be paid again to build on them. Yes,
How
for the ones that were built.
How many times did that actually happen is what I'm trying to get at. All 25, right?
It wasn't all 25. And my recollection at this point is that there were 10. But in order to go forward, you're going to have to pay it. Not only are you going to have to pay it, some were paid at 1915, but the price went up. In order to get where you wanted to be, it went up $400.
Okay. Phase one doesn't have this prepaid clause in it. So what?
Phase one agreement doesn't have the prepaid clause. Every HUD for every lot has a representation that the developer is getting reimbursed for prepaid water meters. He got the money for the same reason. That's the same misrepresentation that leads to the fraud that took the money from my client that he's held for more than 8 years.
But how could that be fraudulent inducement if it's only in the HUD and it wasn't in the original agreement that you entered into? Because that's the agreement you had to have been fraudulently induced to enter into.
It's fraud. They argue fraudulent inducement, and we have a claim for it, too, but the judgment's rendered on 2701. If you make a misrepresentation of existing material fact in connection with a real estate transaction, they did. What did they induce my client to do? to give them an extra $1,915. Not only did they induce my client to do it based on the fraud, they got a federally insured bank to loan money based on a representation that something had been paid that wasn't.
How are you going to get around Formosa and the economic loss rule, which I think only exception is fraudulent inducement?
I think 2701, the way it's set up statutorily, is if you make it talks about in a contract.
You're telling me 2701 is fraudulent inducement?
It sets out the elements. I think it, in essence, it is a fraudulent inducement, but it's not the fraudulent. Maybe it's a statutory codification of a fraudulent inducement in connection with a real estate transaction.
So in the phase one, in those lots, what was your evidence that at the time that they said that they were going to make those payments, prepay those water tap fees, they knew that that was false? Because that's one of the elements, isn't it?
If you're only talking about at the time of the contract or the execution of the contract, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
I actually, because of the language in the contract, and we've argued it in the brief and we argued it at trial, because there was no earnest money put up, and the party said in the absence of earnest money, the contract doesn't apply, I think the way you look at this as each of those closings is a separate contract. The contract is only enforceable to the extent of the closings that actually occurred. Each of those closings is a separate agreement. At that point in time, in the HUD, there is a representation that we have prepaid these meter fees, which is totally false.
What was your evidence that they knew it was false at the time it was made?
You have to look at, on the one hand, you have a point where Mr. Foreman, at page 40, and this is, I believe, volume 2 of the record, at page 40, he admits that the meter fees were not paid. At a later point in time, he refuses to admit or deny. He says, it's 8 years ago, I don't remember what happened then. And then he says, well, I'm 71 and I don't remember one way or the other. Toward the end, when he's being asked by his own counsel, well, what was your definition of prepaid? He said, well, prepaid meant that we pay groups of 10, 20, 40 at a time. If you know that you are only paying a portion, you necessarily know you haven't paid for all of them. You can't have it both ways. When you sign a HUD that says, I have prepaid these, it's false because you know you haven't prepaid all of them. Now, to get someone who's just committed fraud to say, oh, well, I knew I was committing fraud, you have to rely on the circumstantial evidence. You have to judge from what the witness says on the stand. You have to judge from how he delivers the testimony. That is the evidence that the court considered, and the court determined that he did have knowledge of it. And I think it is knowledge. You can't admit that you didn't pay them all, and you only paid a portion, and you had this pattern and practice, which you haven't told the other side that you're doing, and call that prepaid as to everything. And again, you've got a HUD that says this is a true and accurate representation of the deal under penalties of perjury that you've signed off on.
So he never represented to you in phase one that he had prepaid the water tap fees?
I think he did. I believe Mr. Morrow did testify on a couple of occasions that he did represent that he had paid those meter fees.
And that induced him into entering into the contract?
I believe Mr. entering into the contract and agreeing to repay those, yes. That he would not have done it but for the statement that that would have been prepaid. He would have had no reason. And in fact, to take it further, if he had known the water wasn't available to all of the lots, he wouldn't have started closing. Because if you take a chance of buying lots and some of the lots are not buildable because the water's not there, it takes away the value of what you're buying. Because as a builder, once you get into a subdivision and you start building and you start investing money on models and construction, you don't want to get halfway down the road and find out that the lots you thought you had aren't buildable because there's no water available to them.
I'm kind of hearing that he was fraudulently induced into paying $1,915, but not fraudulently introduced into signing a contract. Because I'm going to have real hard time believing that he entered into this contract and a material term was that the water tap fees had been paid. Is that what you're telling me?
That the water tap fees being paid? I think
that's a material term to entering into this contract to buy a lot that cost, I don't know, more than $60,000-$70,000.
I think the cost was $30,000 roughly.
Oh, okay.
And you're talking about 5%.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about the number of lots, at this point in time we're talking 50,000 that we know got stuck. When you're talking 80, you're talking closer to $160,000 on the whole value of the contract.
Okay, listen.
That doesn't seem immaterial.
Let's move on. I'm having trouble understanding your explanation for why you didn't breach the contract to buy the other lots.
Goes back to the earnest money. The contract itself says that $5,000 is required as a condition of keeping the contract in force. I think the parties agreed that you had to have the earnest money. They did have a pattern and practice of not putting up earnest money on these deals.
But you otherwise went ahead and performed under the contract other than paying the earnest money. Now what you're saying is, well, I didn't pay the earnest money, so I can get out of the rest of the contract. Isn't that what you're saying?
The only testimony on the point, I think, came from Mr. Morrow that said he understood that the contract wouldn't be enforceable. It provided a guide, which they did use. Lots were, in fact, purchased. There's no question they were purchased.
Under the terms of the contract.
Referable back to the contract. Yes, it could have been a letter of intent, and they could have been purchased under the same letter of intent. And it would be referable back to that. But I don't think it enforces, I don't think it gives the whole contract validity again, because then you're taking away from that whole provision that says it's not enforceable unless you put the earnest money up. To me, it's similar to a contract that's unenforceable because it violates the statute of frauds. To the extent that it's performed in part, it's enforceable to the extent of that performance, but only to the extent of the performance. And if it's a partial performance, that's as far as you go. And in this case, I think you have multiple partial performances up to the lots that were closed. We can't deny that the lots were closed and that they used the formulas in the contract for those. Now, that's item number one. Item number two is if you're going to enforce a contract, then you have to enforce it entirely. One provision says substantial completion is water is available to each of the lots. Mr. Foreman in his testimony, and the proof is that water wasn't available to each of the lots. It was available to small groups on some sort of a rolling basis. That's not to the subdivision as a whole.
A minute ago, you told me that we were going to have each individual closing basically was going to stand on its own. At each individual closing, was water available to the lot on the ones that closed?
These lots were closed more than 6 years prior to the trial. Water wasn't available. The meters were not paid.
So there were no lots that were substantially complete?
There were some. What I'm saying is I don't think that the contract applies. If the contract doesn't apply, then you have multiple HUDs that represent closings.
Yes.
But if we assume that we can forget the earnest money provision and the contract does apply, okay, if the contract does apply, then it's his burden to prove that he has an enforceable contract that's not ambiguous that we can understand, which the court had an issue with that, and that he has fully performed. Full performance on his part says that as to all of those lots, water is available. He cannot meet that. It's undisputed by his own testimony. Water was not available.
Did you discover that before or after you failed to purchase according to the takedown schedule?
Didn't discover until 08, which was after the takedown schedule. But the law doesn't require that you know the other person has breached. You can't successfully hide your failure to comply with the contract and use that as an excuse and then claim the other person breached. You have to prove you have performed the contract, and that's what they failed to do. Just briefly as to the laches argument, to return to that, the original laches argument that was raised at trial had more of a pleading issue. We do think we put them on notice. Our claim was 25 lots that we hadn't been paid for. That's what we wanted the money for. We referred to the wrong agreement that referenced those. We corrected it within the limitations period. The court had problem with it at first, rejected the argument and the judgment. The contractual limitations argument, which I think is more of a contractual defense as opposed to a laches argument, wasn't raised until the motion for new trial. I do think that there is clear and convincing evidence. The judge considered it. He considered the witnesses, the testimony, and he didn't render judgment for a multiple of the damages. He gave a portion of the actual damages as compensatory damages, as punitive damages, and I think it's appropriate in this situation where there is no other conclusion but that Mr. Foreman represented payments had been made in order to get money in his pocket, and he kept it.
All right, let me get this 25 lots straight one more time.
Yes, sir.
Some of these lots you put into inventory, you never built on, and so you prepaid money for the water tap fee that wasn't paid, you never got reimbursed. Rest of them you went down, you did build on, you found out that no water tap fee had been paid, and so not only did you pay the $1,915 or its increase, but then you had to pay it again to get the water tap fee, and you weren't reimbursed as was his alleged course of dealing. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one more question. I noticed that there was a modified final judgment. I haven't looked at the clerk's record yet, but what caused that to happen? If you know. Maybe it's not.
It was something... As I recall, I think there was another claim that had to be severed.
It doesn't have anything to do with this appeal?
Doesn't have anything to do with this appeal. And this the original judgment was not final for something that had been left, a hanging chad, for lack of a better term. We got rid of the hanging chad so that this would be final.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Let's give counsel an extra 2 minutes. Because we ran over a couple of minutes. All right, let's proceed.
Just very briefly, again, with regard to the fraudulent inducement claim, there was simply no clear and convincing evidence that either one of the contracts was entered into as a result of a knowing false statement or representation that was made by my clients to induce the buyer to enter into these contracts. These contracts were contracts for the sale and purchase of developed single-family lots. And the materiality, intent, and falsity elements simply do not exist to support a fraudulent inducement that would give rise to exemplary damages under the holding in Formosa.
How do you redress his earnest money argument?
The earnest, yes, there was a provision that called for earnest money. The earnest money was not paid, Your Honor. However, and this is set forth in the breach, they're claiming that because there was no earnest money paid, there was no consideration to support the enforceability of the agreements. And the cases state that there is consideration when you have a mutuality of obligations, when you have a mutuality of promises, and if you actually have performance under the contract, that vitiates any strict requirement that in order to be enforceable, the earnest money has to be paid. And there are cases that support the proposition that the party who would be benefited by the payment of the earnest money, in this case my client, can waive that requirement and proceed on with the agreement, which is exactly what happened.
Now, were you aware that on the lots on which he built, he went down to the municipal water district or the city or whatever, and found out that the prepaid had not been paid and paid it again?
No, and I would respectfully question any statements that were made that they actually paid it again, because these lots were not built upon. They were held in inventory for years and years and years, and I believe the trial testimony was that the plaintiff, Classic Century Homes, Inc., or its assignee, Classic Century Homes Limited, really only built on three of those lots. I suspect that the issue became relevant when they were attempting perhaps to sell or transfer those lots to other entities which perhaps wanted to build. The last point that I would like to make is that the plaintiff was the first to breach the phase two contract. That's uncontroverted.
But he says you don't have to know that. Though, actually, he said you were the first to breach because you didn't prepay the water tap fees.
Well, we didn't know whether we had or not because, again, a builder approaches my client, hey, I want to build a home and I need water. My client then goes and gets that from Mountain Peak. That was not done from the plaintiff. Those advances were not made. Those requests were not made by the plaintiff until sometime in 2008, over a year after the plaintiff itself just decided that it was only going to buy 20 out of the 43 lots in phase two.
But you say in the contract, we're going to prepay these. You say, well, we said that, but we really didn't mean it. Because of this course of dealing, we really didn't mean it and we couldn't do it. But yet we said we were going to do it in our contract. They're saying that's a breach when you didn't do it. So that means you breached first.
Well,
that's their argument.
Well, the language in the contract doesn't say that we're going to pay it. It simply says, and I don't want to split hairs here, but the actual wording is that the buyer agrees to deposit with a seller at each closing the sum of $1,915 for prepaid water fees. And again,
So prepaid by just some who?
Well, prepaid by the fact that in this particular Midlothian subdivision, unlike any other subdivision that was developed by my clients, the city didn't provide the water. You had to go to Mountain Peak Water Company, and they apparently had concerns about having an adequate water supply, and would only allocate groups or numbers of lots to the developer. And that's what my client meant by prepaid. They had to go down there. They would buy 20, 30, 40 groups of lots without them being designated for specific lots. And then, not to beat a dead horse, but when a builder needed to build a house, they would notify my client. My client would make sure that the water tap fee was paid to Mountain Peak. My client didn't even know about any of this.
You got money from them that you never paid to Mountain Peak.
That's correct.
So are you challenging the compensatory damages?
Yes, we are, and primarily on the basis of latches. But honestly, our breach of contract claim, based upon the evidence at trial, was clear, it was uncontradicted, and it was free of any defense. There was an admission made by the plaintiff's representative that, yeah, we were supposed to buy 43 lots, we only bought 20. And the damage model, and this was in the record, pursuant to the terms of the contract, my client sued for the interest on each lot that was supposed to be paid by the buyer under the contract, plus the ad valorem taxes that were supposed to have been paid. The total monetary damage amount claimed by my client under its breach of contract claim exceeds the principal amount of the water tap damages that the plaintiff is claiming.
All right. Thank you all for obviously Thank being you. Very well prepared and making a good oral presentation. Your case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You want to take a break or you want to go right ahead?